This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, I wanna shoot, baby. Shoot.
Ooh. How you doing, baby? Shoot. No, not you. You. Shoot. The bow-legged one. Yeah. What's your name? Damn, baby. That sounds sexy.
Here I go again. Oh, girls, man. What's my weakness?
Man.
Okay, then chillin', minding my business.
Word.
Your souls, I looked around and I couldn't believe this. I swear, I stand, my niece, my witness. The brother had it going on with something kinda wicked, wicked. Had to kick it. I'm not shy, so I asked for the digits. I hope no, that don't make me see what I want. Slip, slide to it swiftly. Felt it in my hips, so I dip back. My bag of tricks, then I flip for a tip. Made me wanna do tricks on them, lick them like a lollipop should be licked. Came to my senses and I chill for a bit. Don't know how you do the voodoo that you do so well. It's a spell, hell makes me wanna shoot, shoot, shoot. You're packed in your stack, especially in the back. Brother, wanna thank your mother for a butt like that. Can I get some fries with that shake, shake? If looks could kill, you would be an Uzi or a shotgun. Bang! What's up with that thing? I wanna know, how does it hang? Straight up, wait up, hold up, Mr. Lover. Like Prince said, you're a sexy mother. Well, I like them real wild. B-boy style by the mile. Smooth black skin with a smile. Bright as the sun, I wanna have some fun. Come and give me some of that yum yum chocolate chip honey dip. Can I get a scoop? Baby, take a ride in my coupe. You make me wanna shoot. Work up a sweat when you sit to my loo, my darling. Not falling in love, but I'm falling for you. When I get you, bet your bottom dollar you were best under pressure.
Yo, Sandy, I wanna like taste you.
Get your lips wet, cause it's time to have pep. On your mark, get set, go, let me go. Let me shoot to the next man in a three-piece suit. I spend all my dough, Ray me cutie. Shoot, shoo-ba-doobie, like Scooby-Dooby-Doo. I love you in your big jeans. You give me nice dreams, you make me wanna scream. Ooh, 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 I like what you do, when you do, what you do. You make me wanna shoot. Oh my goodness. Girl, look at him. He is the cutest brother in here. And he's coming this way.
Send a B, wanna get with me, cool, uh-huh. But I'm wicked G, yeah. Hit skins whenever quickly,
right.
I hit the skins for the hell of it, just for the yell I get, for the smell of it,
smell
you
it.
Want my ball, here's the hot rod,
hot
12
rod.
Inches to a yard and
see?
Have you sounding like a big 12 of a 6'2", wanna hit you,
so what you wanna do,
what you wanna do,
I wanna
Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio, it's Mark Dolan. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News at exactly 12:04 on a Thursday afternoon, and it's a very big day. Our fate as a nation is being decided by David Cameron himself. He's in Brussels, he's pressing the flesh, he's drinking a lot of lattes and cappuccinos, and we are told that by the end of the day there will be a deal on Europe. It's the only story in town, but we've got a lot of big stories to get through after what has been an eventful week. To help me do so, to help me masticate through the big stories of the... Be careful, Tiernan. It's Tim Duieb. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Listen, it's a real treat to have you here. Let's just kick off with Europe, because it's all over the papers. The Daily Mail seems to be running a very consistent campaign of smear against the very notion of the EU. Here's the latest headline. 3 million UK workers are now foreign. David Cameron suffered a hammer blow last night as it emerged the number of EU workers in Britain has rocketed by 215,000 in just 12 months. We also have this very peculiar situation where we are all on tenterhooks to see what Boris Johnson's going to decide to do, which I don't understand, because he's in the cabinet, but like in a ceremonial role. I think he basically sort of makes the tea. He's kind of ornamental.
Yeah,
he's up there with the Queen in terms of executive powers.
Yeah, it's just to sort of add to the hair displays.
Really. It's just that most of them are so follically challenged. It's nice just to have someone with
that's it. It balances
a good mop.
It out. Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, it's a very, very big day. And by the end of it, apparently, we'll have a deal or we won't have a deal.
Yeah, and I don't think that whether we do or we won't, you know, I don't think it's going to change anyone's minds anyway. I don't think anyone that's definitely wants to be out or in is going to change their mind about it based on what Cameron gets out of this anyway, because his deal is, well, this is the thing that's bothering me as a kind of, I consider myself sort of lefty, and what I want to stay in the EU, but I think there are things I don't like about the EU, and Cameron's reasons for his deal are all completely the opposite to what I want from the, you know, he wants to keep London as a tax haven. Don't do that. That's ridiculous. You know, he wants to get rid of migration or stop EU migration. Actually, I've been looking into it, and it's really not a problem. Like, we don't know the exact figures. We get rid of just as many UK people go to the EU as EU people come here. So if we close borders, we'll have to get all those lazy people from south of Spain back, and I don't want that.
No,
all
that's
those
the last
train
thing
robbing
we need.
Criminals.
I mean, in terms of his renegotiation, it does have echoes to me. There's a couple of things. It's a little bit harsh, but there's a slight element that when he gets to the end of this negotiation, it'll be like Neville Chamberlain with his letter from Hitler. Now, I'm not comparing any figure in Brussels to that of history's greatest dictator, but there was a slight element where, you know, this guy is scrabbling around. Maybe it's more like the weapons of mass destruction. It's like they've decided the strategy for this referendum is going to be the renegotiation. That's why we've got to stay in. It feels like window dressing.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a nice comment, that Cameron made a couple of weeks ago where he said, judge me on my EU deal, which I thought, A, that means what, we're not meant to judge him on all the other awful stuff he's done. That's kind of an easy way out. But also, I think people will, and I don't think it's going to look good for him, however this turns out. I think we're going to judge him going, you've done a terrible job.
Now, I'm going to have to inject a little balance into this debate and maybe even provoke some conflict with the Duieb, which
that's
I know
fine.
It's in your locker. You enjoy a ruck. So here goes. Looking at this renegotiation, maybe there are arguments, like you mentioned the tax status of the City of London and that sort of thing. The fact that what the EU generally as an organisation would like to do is have more of a streamlined tax solution when it comes to financial services, which is all well and good. But financial services are like the backbone of our economy, aren't they? And so the City of London, I think, is responsible for something like 20% of UK GDP. The argument thereby is, if you are to have a set of policies which harm the City of London, harm, like, you know, financial services, that's a little bit like a tax on cheese for the French.
Yes, that is true.
And I love cheese.
Yeah, me too as well. Well, the EU regulates cheese as well, so that's another issue why you might perhaps be opposed to it or prefer it, depending on how you like your cheese. that is an issue, I suppose, but it depends on how they streamline. I mean, I think that what they're aiming to do, I suppose, here we go, try and articulate my words properly. The issue that I have is that the government say that they're slapping down on tax avoidance, and that they say that it's immoral, and there was the big issues with Google and everything else where they didn't really do that.
Yeah.
And now what they're wanting from the EU is to keep London as an area of tax avoidance. So whether or not it's a good or a bad thing, it's the hypocrisy that I think really bothers me in that. But yes, also the reason that our financial services are our backbone is because all our other industries are a mess. And if we leave the EU, that's going to destroy a whole ton of trade from various other industries. We're going to have to rely on the financial ones even more. So, I mean,
we would so much rather have a big manufacturing sector like the Germans do, that we're not reliant on financial services, and also just on an economy that doesn't make anything. It's all just bits of money being shuffled around from one
really
bank
nice
account to another.
If people bought stuff that was made in the UK rather than we sent a banker over there and he gave you some shares or whatever, you know, it's not very exciting as a souvenir gift, is it?
Well, no, it isn't. It seems like it's a sort of phantom economy, really, that we have in to some degree. And I just wonder whether, you know, the main precedent that could come out of this renegotiation, because I'm desperate for something positive to come out of it. I really don't want it to be like WMDs for Blair, because, you know, Blair decided, okay, here's how I'm going to sell the Iraq war. We'll have the weapons of mass destruction. They never materialise. Cameron's gone heavy on this renegotiation. So far, it's been described as thin gruel. It's nice to hear Dickensian expressions coming back into commonplace language. And that's probably, so far, from what we've seen, that's probably a fair comment, thin gruel. There's nothing seemingly of substance. And it's all being picked away at the moment by lawyers in, well, not smoke-filled rooms, but those special e-cigarette-filled rooms.
Vape-filled rooms, yeah.
And they're sort of having their... So, perhaps it's fruitless. The one thing that could come out of it is this, and maybe this is my hope for the EU, which is, because I'm a massive pro-European, just like yourself, I think I want Brussels to accept within their DNA, within the psychology of the place, and also within the constitution, to accept that within the EU, there are now going to be two types of countries. See, this is the real battle, and this is where they have had an ideological fight for so long. And it's been defined by the Eurozone. You have the Euro countries and the Eurozone countries, and then the non-Eurozone countries like the UK, Denmark, and others. And it seems to me that what has started to hurt Britain is that we are being kind of, we're caught up in this wave of Eurozone policies, which also affect us and affect our economy and our ability to also, you know, make decisions and stuff. If you've got a common currency, you don't really have sovereignty anymore.
No.
You are part of just one big country. Because one of the defining things of a country, apart from a military, is a currency.
Yes, that's true. And it's something I miss about going to Europe, in a way. I miss the francs and the drachmas.
And the lira, feeling like a billionaire. The lira. That's the one. But I just wonder whether it's an important step, as a fan of the EU, I hasten to add, whether maybe it's worth accepting this fudge of two types of country, because then I wonder whether if you've got two types of country, you can then just go on forever, really. It seems to be where Britain is struggling is this, it's the kind of moving towards the United States of Europe.
Yes, yeah, it definitely is. And I think that's definitely part of the scary, you know, element of the EU, is that it's kind of globalization wise, it is just making things into one kind of big single market. Well, no, that's you know, where everything has the same. Well, it's not a single market, is it? Where there's no real competitiveness and there's no real trade. And that is a bit terrifying. But yeah, it does work for Denmark and it does work for other countries. But I think we need to be in it to reform it.
Would
it
you go the other way? Because I read a journalist said actually we should go completely the other way now and join the Euro and just really, really get stuck in and be a big player.
It's like, you know, that's the equivalent of someone saying, yeah, we should just get rid of beer from the UK. Like, yes. It will never happen. No one will ever let that happen.
Do you think we will, in your lifetime, we won't see Britain joining the Euro?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I can't imagine we'll ever. There'd be too much opposition to it.
Mm. Do you think it's, and first of all, are we being, and I'm going to use a football word, are we being a pain in the arse here? Because Britain, I've got family in on the continent in Austria, and they do talk a lot about, you know, Britain's always got its foot on the brake, always wants special rules. They want all the advantages, none of the disadvantages.
Well, that's it. This whole deal that Cameron's doing is basically saying, why can't we have things that are special just for us?
Yeah.
Which sort of ruins the point of a union, in a way. Mm. You know, it's kind of, yeah, hey, we'll be part of this team, but can we put an eye in there somewhere?
Is it our history? I mean, does it boil
we're
down?
We're an island,
does
aren't
it,
we?
Yeah. You know? Is it geographical, and is it the fact that we stopped Hitler?
I don't know if it's that bit, but it's definitely I think it's geographical. I think we're an island, we're our own nation. I suppose it's probably less to do with stopping Hitler, but the fact that we once conquered half the world.
Yeah.
Why should we now be part of a group? I don't know. There's definitely a lot of opposing ideological views, but I think the interesting thing is that nobody really knows what would happen if we left. You know, that's the big problem. Like, stock markets could completely crash. It could completely ruin us because just out of fear that something might go wrong, you know. We just don't know. And I still think the best thing is to stay in and try and...
Well, I agree. And I also think the economic problems that Europe have at the moment and have had ever since the downturn and the credit crunch, the run on Greek banks, all of the rest of it, the sovereign debt crisis, which many EU nations are still firmly in the grip of, including France, Italy and Spain. It's not just Greece and Portugal who are on the ropes. I mean, unemployment is worryingly high in France, you know, right at this moment in time. But I still see these economic problems in the long term as fairly transient. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Europe's obviously going to recover its economic growth, and jobs will come back, and it'll start growing again. And
it I think we have to be
careful, because if we leave, at the moment, it looks like maybe a good time to leave. If you just look at the bottom line, the British economy is growing, unemployment's down, inflation. It's all quite sunny at the moment. But 20 years' time, shoe could be on the other foot.
Absolutely. It's not a very... it's not very future planning, is it? This is all very immediate. We must get out now. And you go, well, think about it sort of in the future. I mean, there's lots of things that I was reading as well where, you know, sure, we've got this problem with EU migration, but if we leave the EU, it just means that we'll have non-EU migration. We'll still be at high level. It's not going to change very much. Or there's things, you know, we're worried about EU migrants supposedly getting in-work benefits, but no other European country has in-work benefits. It's a problem we have because our work doesn't pay enough. So it's looking, you know, we're blaming other factors for a lot of issues that are here, I think.
And the Eurosceptics have accused the In campaign of hijacking Prince William.
Of hijacking Prince William?
Just generally.
Just himself,
I think it's patronising. They're saying Prince William was dragged into the row over Britain's membership of the European Union last night after pro-Brussels campaigners tried to claim he had signalled his support for staying in. In a surprise intervention, the Prince briefly appeared to echo a central claim of the In campaign that Britain would be less secure if it votes to go it alone. Obviously, the royal family have to be damn careful on this one. They're supposed to be apolitical, aren't they? But I think if it comes to a massive constitutional issue like this, maybe it is worth hearing from them.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, I know
it's almost beyond politics, isn't it? The EU, it's beyond our position within the European continent. It's like, that's bigger than politics.
Yeah, well, it's our position in the world. You know, it's how the US are sort of intervening as well. People go, why should they? And you go, well, because it affects how they trade with us. That's why they should. It's a global matter. And I kind of feel, especially as the royal family are supposedly representatives of the UK, you know, they are representatives, then they should be allowed an opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately there are parallels between this debate about the referendum and the in or out with the Scottish referendum. Mm. And at the time, and I've lived in Scotland for 4 years, it's one of my favourite places in the world to be. I just think it's the most incredible nation and geography, culture, history, all the rest of it. However, I wrote an article in which the actual headline was "Get Over Yourself, Scotland." Okay, and, I did put a lot of noses out of joint.
I was going to say, how much hate mail did you get?
Yeah, I've found my gigs up in Edinburgh quite rough ever since.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah,
but I wanted to do it because I just felt this is a matter of life or death, really. This is about whether Scotland goes it alone. I want to just do my bit by adding my voice of dissent to this whole thing. And my main argument was, you know, Scotland's a great nation, England is a great nation, but actually, in the general scheme of things, Scotland, England, Wales and Northern Ireland, it's, you know, we're not all kind of massive global player like we used to be. And if we kind of are glued together, we're quite substantial, but on our own, who gives a shit about, you know?
Yeah.
And so in a sense, the premise of the article is Scotland, you're not as significant as you think. It's a small country, a small population. It's mainly sheep. Get over yourself. Now, it was harsh, but it came from the heart. I now am going to use the same argument against the whole of the UK in relation to the EU. It's like, stop having such delusions of grandeur. Stop having this, oh, we'll be fine, we look at our history sort of argument that we've got. The sort of slightly egocentric aspect of our character as a nation. And just say, actually, we're not that big, and we're much better having a union with, like, Germany.
Yeah,
Who are, like, you know, unbelievably massively brilliant.
We've always got this, we're the best, we're better than all these other European countries. And I think that does come back to, like I said, sort of, we once conquered, you know, a good percentage of the world. I think that's never really left us. Like, we might be a tiny island, but we know what we're doing, you know. It's why we've got issues still with the Falklands. It's why even, I think it comes down to, like, Trident and all that. We need nuclear missiles because we're a world power. And you go, we've got 200 nuclear missiles. USA has 3,000. Like, you know, Russia has 3,000. It really doesn't. I don't know why we're arguing. We're nothing. We should just shush and hide and hope no one notices.
Shush
us.
And hide is totally. That's trending as we speak. It's an absolutely right thing to say. Well, this debate will run. We'd love to hear what you think at Mr. Mark Dolan on Twitter at FUBAR Radio. Tiernan, what's your Twitter handle, please?
You have to be able to spell my name. That's the trick. It's at Tiernan Douyeb. So it's TIERNANDOUIEB. If you throw a load of vowels into Google, it sort of rearranges them normally.
Of course it does. And actually, while we're plugging Twitter handles, can you tell me what you're up to, please?
So there's a couple of things. Firstly, if you're in London this weekend, I'm co-running the Phoenix Fringe, which is at the Phoenix near Oxford Circus.
It's a very, very grand venue, isn't it? Right next to John Lewis, of all places.
It is right next to John Lewis.
So you could have a really great afternoon / evening, couldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Go and get a lovely sandwich and then, peruse some items of clothing, then come and watch.
Do you ever frequent the Place to Eat franchise within John Lewis?
I do indeed.
I've always got mixed feelings about the Place to Eat platform.
Oh, right. Why is that?
I don't know. There's one in Brent Cross at the flagship John Lewis, and it just smells of fried fish.
Isn't that just Brent Cross, though?
Yeah, it could just be a Brent Cross thing. Might be a Brent thing.
Might just be a Brent thing, yeah. So no wonder they're cross.
I just don't want to, if I'm having a scone, I don't want to smell like a different food stuff.
Yeah, no, do you know, I hate that as well. Yeah, you want the scone to smell of scone and nothing else. Yeah, I'm a purist as well. I understand that.
So are you headlining it? What's your role?
Oh, no. I'm splitting a bill with Holly Walsh on Saturday at 2 p.m. But we've got loads of acts on the whole weekend. We've got Russell Howard, Rob Delaney, Rich Hall, Sarah Pascoe, Sarah Kendall. And they're all trying. Some are doing old shows. Some are doing new work in progress shows.
Brilliant.
It's £10 a show, or you can spend £20 and you see three shows for £20. So there's loads going on. It's on Friday night, Saturday and Sunday all day. So come down to that.
So that's great. Tell me about performing at 2 in the afternoon. How is that? Because normally the received wisdom is that alcohol makes us funnier.
Yeah, no, it's all right, because it's especially what we've noticed over the years of doing, this is our fourth year of doing Phoenix Fringe, and this is just our winter fringe, so it's just a weekend, we'll do a long one in the summer. Audiences come kind of prepared. And also, bear in mind, it's Britain at 2 in the afternoon, some people are pissed.
Anyway.
So it's quite all right. And so you can check out that if you go to phoenixfringe.co.uk, you can see all the lineups.
Phoenixfringe.co.uk. It's brilliant. It's the perfect venue for comedy because it's subterranean, isn't it? It's in the basement, and it's kind of just it's a little, I don't know, it's offbeat, and it feels cozy.
It's really cozy. Only seats, I think it's just under 200 seats, so you can see like Russell Howard in a room for less than 200 people.
It's not
That's
bad.
That's the aim.
It's not bad. I mean, there are health and safety issues. If there's a fire, it's game over.
I'll assure you, we've had all that checked. And it's air conditioned in the summer, and it's warm in the winter. It's like the most perfect.
I can't play it because everyone knows I'm a famous claustrophobic, and I mean it down there it really is. It's kind of Joseph Fritzl like, if I'm honest with you.
If
Fritzl was going to design a comedy club, it would be the Phoenix.
I think that should be our new tagline from now on. It's
downstairs at Fritzl's.
If Fritzl designed a club, this would be it.
So that's fantastic. So you're doing that and you're performing around the country, being glittering and brilliant in all places.
I'm also, well, that's debatable. I've just started a podcast called The Partly Political Broadcast. And it's a satirical podcast where I talk about the past week's political news, but also each
week. Wait a minute. This makes you a rival now.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, this makes you... You're Leno to my Letterman.
Should I leave?
I'm going to raise us up to that level. Let's not do the undersell. I'm tired of apologising for myself.
You're so good at the PR, Mark. So good.
I don't mess around. So it's called... What's it called again?
The Partly Political Broadcast.
That's a great, great name.
And each week it's got me doing some comedy, but it's also... I have a guest each week who actually explains stuff clearly. So the week just gone had an EU policy specialist and he actually explains what would happen if we left, what would happen if we stayed.
And he's clear and interesting. I bet he just said, "We don't know."
Yeah, he did say that.
We've looked at this for 10 years and we ain't got a clue.
But he's interesting. He's called John Worth and he writes a brilliant blog, which you can find at johnworth.eu, I believe. And he's an Englishman based in Berlin who works in Brussels and loves the free movement of the EU. Otherwise, he wouldn't have a job. So, you know, it kind of works both sides of the pond differently, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. So that's it. So the Partly Political podcast, and is that on iTunes or where do we find that?
Yeah, it's on iTunes or you can find it via my website if you can spell my name. But iTunes.
Tiernan Douyeb. It's not that hard. Douyeb.
It's not that hard, but nobody should have a surname spelt like that, should they?
The only thing I would have thought with you is it's not a call centre friendly name.
That's it. Yeah, no, it's not, no.
And I'm imagining that you put off quite significantly important calls just because you can't face that.
Well, it's also, Mark, as you well know, when you're introduced on stage, it's useful for compared to get your name right. And I have on countless times been announced as Tim and Dweeb, Ty Mandovia, Teen and Doobie.
They all sound like porn stars.
They do, don't they? Maybe this is what I should just.
This
keep
is the
them
problem with
aliases.
With all of that. But people are expecting quite a different show when you walk on.
That is true.
Tien and Doobie. Yeah. Sounds like a caner. Sounds like someone who just walks on stone.
Hey, I'm Tin and Doobie.
Hey, man. I am eating Snickers bars on my garage, man.
So my next Edinburgh show is just going to be a character hour where I play each one of my different names, depending on how they sound.
Well, so I tell you what, I'd certainly pay to see that. I would also pay to see Tin and Doobie at the Phoenix Fringe, and also check him out. All of his gigs are featured on his entertaining Twitter handle, which is at Tin and Doobie, D-O-U-I-E-B. After our next record, which is courtesy of no less than Kanye West, we're going to find out which A-list musical icon was turned away from a party. We're going to find out why your boss shouts and screams, and find out that may make them a nice person. And the man whose wife helped him to get a date on Tinder. That and much, much more. It's Mark Dolan Eats the News. Here is Kanye West, and this is 30 Hours, which I think is about as long as it's going to take for Juncker and Cameron to make a deal in Brussels.
You see, they never saw this coming. Well, you're not alone. $1 million renovations to a happy home. My ex said she gave me the best years of her life. I saw a recent picture of her. I guess she was right. I wake up, accessing the damages, checking media takeout. Pictures of me drunk walking out with a bitch, but it's blurry enough to get the fake out. I wake up, all veggies, no eggs. I hit the gym, all chest, no legs. Yeah. Then I make myself a smoothie. Yeah. Then me and wifey make a movie. Chicago, St. Louis to Chicago. Underlay, E-I-E-I. Uh-oh, you had me driving five, another switch to time zone. You was the best of all time at the time, though. Yeah. You wasn't mine, though. But I still drove 30 hours. Baby, I still drove 30 hours to you. Yeah. I remember rapping for Jay and Cam. Young producer just trying to get his flows off. I remember being nervous to do Victoria's Secret till I pictured everybody with their clothes off. Expedition was Eddie Bauer edition. I'm driving with no winter tires in December. Skirt, 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 like a private school for women. Then I get there and all the Popeyes is finished, girl. You don't love me, you're just pretending. I need a happy beginning, middle, and ending. Chicago, St. Louis to Chicago. It's getting hot in here, that's all that I know. Got a hotel room, 3 stars for you. You call down for an omelet. Girl, it's 5 in the morning. You realize you got the Doubletree, not the Aria. Only thing open is Waffle House. Girl, don't start with me. I used to Western Union for you like it's no pride. Cause you was in college complaining about it's no jobs. But you was sucking a nigga dick the whole time. Well, I guess a blowjob's better than no job. Then I drove back 30 hours.
Baby, I'm Radio presents
The Friday Social with Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne.
There was a table with a reserve sign on it. So what I did was very maturely, I wrote reserved at 7 p.m. for my big D. Oh, the texter was permanent.
Right.
Great.
Hey, sorry, I need to confess something. And I wrote reserved at 7 p.m. for my big D.
You are. Well, was that you?
But then I realized after I did it that it was permanent marker. My name's Michael Payne. Michael Payne, it is. I'm a rapper.
No, you're not a rapper.
Yeah, you are the whitest man alive. That's who you are.
Every Friday.
The Friday Social with Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne.
From 1 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Michael and Hugh are up next on FUBAR Radio. We're live. It's 12:30 and we're in the company of Tin and Duieb, whose brand new radio show is out now, and it's called The Partly Political Broadcast. And listen, Tin, and let's talk about a couple of things I wanted to throw in your direction. News just in, the 80s sitcom Some Mothers Do Have 'Em, starring the actor and musical star Michael Crawford, is to return for a one-off special with the BBC.
That is the news we've all been waiting for, isn't it?
Of course, I couldn't get on with my life, and now I can. So I should, because our audience, 98% of them won't know what the hell that is, because you'd have to be over 80 to remember it. I do, oddly. But it was a great show. It was a precursor to Mr. Bean, actually, in a sense that involved amazingly ambitious physical stunts.
Yeah. I mean, there was some very good classic slapstick moments in it, weren't there?
That's it. It was uniquely British. And I think for a sort of 80s sitcom, a studio sitcom, it had quite a lot of ambition in terms of its production, because at that time, sitcoms just involved, you know, you had a set and it was like kitchen, living room, and then maybe sort of garden patio, and that was it, you know. Whereas this involved him on the high street, in a accidentally on a children's buggy hurtling behind a bus or something, you know.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So it's quite dramatic, and at its height, it was scoring in excess of 20 million viewers.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen with anything anymore.
No, exactly. It was a huge show. So they're bringing it back, and I mean, there's a couple of questions. Really, I mean, if you haven't seen it, you don't remember it, you're too young for that. Check it out on. YouTube, because I think although some of the humour is a little dated, there's innuendo and things like that, which we're kind of a bit over now. But ultimately, it was a character that was very lovable. It was slightly sort of Norman Wisdom type character. And I wonder whether, I mean, this is the debate, really. If you've got a classic series like that, do you bring it back or do you just leave it unspoiled as a wonderful memory?
I go for the unspoiled thing. Definitely, because if you've made something and it's really good, don't then drag it out until it's rubbish. It's like when you have a music star that you love and then they get older and older and then produce a record that you think, oh, that's just rubbish. It just kind of taints it a bit, doesn't it?
Well, I know. I mean, I wonder about that, because that's a massive debate about people like Woody Allen. And Woody Allen churns out a film a year, and he's responsible for, you could argue, upwards of 20 classic films he's made. However, none of those have been in the last sort of 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And as a Woody fan now, you go to his next movie with a heavy heart, thinking, I know I'm not going to enjoy this.
It's also that he doesn't really try to change anything that much. You know, I feel I kind of feel like with, like, say, Louis C.K. or something, every time he develops something new, it's completely... stand-up comic Louis C.K. Every time he develops something new, it's quite different to what he's previously done, or his series keeps growing and changing, so I'm fine with that. But I think if you create a sitcom or whatever, it's just like how it was. It's why I'm quite worried about, say, the David Brent movie, because I sort of feel like we've seen that character probably at its very best. Do we now need an hour and a half movie of that again? But then if he's done something very new with it, brilliant. And also Alan Partridge keeps being brilliant, you know.
Well, that's right. I mean, we just can't have enough of Alan, can we?
Yeah.
Even if he's phoning it in, you want to just spend time in the company of that character. I mean, I think there are a few factors, really. I wonder whether, if you've been away a long time, and clearly Michael Crawford as Frank Spencer, that's 3 decades. So I wonder whether that's, you know, Alan Partridge is still quite a sort of relatively recent phenomenon. John Cleese starred in a Specsavers ad featuring Basil Fawlty. Now, the BBC have been begging John Cleese to bring back Basil Fawlty. I mean, every day they send him a card saying, please come back, let's do this. And he has probably rightly resisted. He's now doing it. He's done an ad. It's quite an amusing ad. The gag is Basil Fawlty, who parks his car, then it won't start. And he's angry that the car won't start. So he gets out, gets a branch, which is an echo of a scene from the original series. And then he starts bashing the car with a branch, except that because his eyesight's so bad, he's bashing a police car.
Right.
So that's a
classic.
But there's just something about, I don't know, it's just these sort of old and wobbly Basil Fawlty. We don't remember Basil being old and wobbly. It's like maybe these characters are like cartoon characters. They're not supposed to age.
Yeah, or I suppose if they are, we should have watched them age. Yeah. You know, like, I think that's like American sitcoms do it, where they have seven to ten series and you watch the characters grow. That's kind of good. Whereas where we've kind of left them in this time capsule, you can visit them for nostalgic purposes. You don't then want to see them 30 years later not being as good.
No, and if you look at series like Friends, that it sort of ran its course because they couldn't really be kooky anymore.
That's
because
they were
sort of pushing 40 and no one is kooky at the age of 40. It's just not a kooky thing.
I mean, flat
thing.
Sharing at 40 just seemed awful to me.
I know. Welcome to Britain's housing crisis.
That's it, yeah.
It's looking like a documentary now, isn't it? I wonder what sort of shows you guys would like to have back at FUBAR Radio. Tell us what you would like to return. I'm thinking Knight Rider.
Oh, wow. Knight Rider would be great. But then would it have Hasselhoff in it?
It's got a hashtag
obvs. Yeah, obviously. But that's what I mean. Is it then? And you'd have to have probably an updated car or same car?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would imagine Kit is probably going to be in a hybrid now.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be great. Obviously, we know that Hasselhoff has had his problems with the bottle. So there'd have to be some arrangement regarding
driving. But that's the thing, is Kit could drive without Michael having
to drive. Kit is going to be the much vaunted Apple car.
That's it, yeah, the Google car. That'll really take something.
It's really slow. It hasn't got turbo boost because it uses up the battery.
Yeah, and it follows Google Maps so often, doesn't make its destination half the time.
No, that's it. But I loved Knight Rider and I'd love to see it back. And I'd like to see, you know, you've got a few heroes like Hasselhoff. It's nice to see Hasselhoff just working.
Yeah. Yes, that's
so
very
nice
true.
To see him
true.
Having a gig.
Have you seen the new X-Files? Because they brought that back.
Yes, of course. And I haven't. And I've heard good things.
It is good. It is very good, actually. Yeah. And they've both. They're both so wonderful at still being Mulder and Scully, which I think really helps.
And they sort of look the same, don't they?
They still look pretty much the same. Yeah.
I mean, she scrubs up quite well. Does our Gillian?
She does indeed. I did last year Mark Watson's 27 hour show. Gillian Anderson shaved my back with hummus. That's one of my favourite things.
That sounds like the title of your next Edinburgh show.
It should be, shouldn't it? It should be. Or my autobiography. Yeah,
so she featured. She turned up. What was she doing there? How did they get her
involved?
She just
popped in to help. I think it was through the help of Emma Kennedy.
All right.
And she turned up and she saw me and said, I want to shave his back.
It's probably Mark. Well, because your back being hairy.
I'm a fairly hair-suited man.
You probably looked like alien life.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. She needed DNA samples for testing.
She'd seen your mugshot. She's like, I've got to meet this.
Well, she was very lovely.
Well, that's quite lucky you. That's quite a bit of a war story, isn't it? What would you like to see the return of?
It's difficult because we were saying this off air and I said Spaced because that's one of my favourite shows ever.
Yeah.
But then, if they brought it back and it wasn't good, that would be the worst thing in the world.
Well, the problem is Simon Pegg would be sort of suntanned and with a slight sort of Los Angeles accent.
That's it,
just look too prosperous somehow for that downtrodden character.
It doesn't quite work so well, does it? But I did love that show so much. I think the day-to-day would be great to get back, but at the same time, news has become what the day-to-day was parodying.
It's like that was a brilliant series, and that's where we enjoyed the birth of Alan Partridge, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
As a regular sort of just doing the sport, of course, on the day-to-day, fronted by Chris Morris. I mean, the Americans have a different culture because the Americans, they love volume anyway. It's all about you know, everything being bigger and better than anywhere else. And if you look at something like The Simpsons, that's a hit show. So they're like, we just want this every day, please. So if you in this country, if you have a hit, it runs to sort of two or three series and then we stop it.
Yeah.
But in America, The Office went on for, I think they recorded something like 200 shows.
Yeah.
I mean, quite extraordinary. I Love Lucy was on TV for decades. So they have a sort of policy where if they're enjoying something, they want to have it forever. We don't.
No, because I think we get a bit bored, don't we? Don't you get a bit
bored? Yeah, we like to move on.
Absolutely, yeah. I also just think that, like we were saying with Friends, it's really hard to believe that these characters are still being stupid after 10 years, still making exactly the same mistakes. I think there's part of a British sort of values, if you like, where we just think, well, that person's an idiot then. I've got no time for them. If they're still incapable of running a hotel but have been doing it for 20 years, why are they doing it? Why haven't they been forced to shut down? You know, like, I think we're probably less sympathetic.
Now, one thing I could never do is shout at you. You're far too marvellous for that. But apparently, if your boss shouts at you, it could be because they're ethical. Yes, indeed. If your boss is pleasant one day but lashes out the next, they may suffer from a phenomenon, easy for you to say, known as moral licensing. Hello, tell me more. Researchers found that if a boss acts in an ethical way, they feel this good behaviour gives them a pass to mistreat employees. And walking the straight line also causes ego depletion, which researchers say can be combated by taking regular breaks during the day. But moral licensing, have you ever heard such nonsense in your life?
Sounds rubbish.
I mean, I have a simple rule of thumb, which I think shouting in a professional context is simply unprofessional.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Especially on radio, I think listeners would really really not like it.
Wouldn't be
just
great.
Just being in their ears all the time.
I mean, there are industries where it seems expected. I would say in the kitchen of a restaurant.
Yeah, or on a noisy building site. If you don't shout, no one will hear you. There's got to be areas where shouting's good.
When was the last time you shouted?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't shout very often. Sometimes on stage I'll get riled up, but it's not normally, you know, it's normally pretend.
Yeah.
I don't think I've shouted for a very long time.
No.
I beeped my horn for the first time, like, on my car for years the other day because somebody nearly drove into me.
That's as close as you get to road rage, isn't it?
Yeah. So does that mean I've got ego depletion?
I think it probably does. I mean, the idea of a boss shouting, I mean, physical contact we know is completely unacceptable. We remember when Jeremy Clarkson punched his producer on the nose.
Oh, yeah.
But in a way, I always wonder whether... I think shouting is just, it's just a non-physical form of violence. It's still an attack.
Yeah, and also, I don't think it shows that you're superior. Like, I always think, especially like, if I look back to teachers and things, the teachers that were the scariest were the ones that didn't shout, that would say things quietly, like, I'm very disappointed in you. You go, oh, no, this is terrifying. Whereas if they'd get all angry, you'd think, ha, weakness.
Yeah, that's
we've
it.
Got to you.
We've sort of, and it is the same with stand-up comedy, is it? I envy the comics who, if the audience are noisy, that those are the ones who go the other way and just get more and more quiet.
Yeah, because then it draws people in to listen to them. So actually, the idea as well that you kind of think, oh, well, I've got all my karma points for today, I'll give this person a bashing, is just the weirdest.
I feel that shouting sort of isn't really, you know, the done thing these days. I think there's a lot less shouting going on because certainly workplaces are more professional, more sterile environments now, more politically correct.
And also you can just do a subtweet instead. You don't need to shout. You can just slowly refer to them in
that's
a Facebook status.
You just get on your smartphone and have the outlet that way. But so I think in those professional circles, I think shouting is not a thing. However, I wonder whether in daily life it might be on the up. If you look at road rage incidents, and every day there's a story about a cyclist who's had an altercation with a driver and they've captured it on their GoPro camera. And there's still anger out there on the streets.
I think people are angry hugely all the time. I just don't think that you need to have a moral licence.
I don't think so.
To be allowed to... I quite like the idea of having to apply for a moral licence.
Yeah.
You have to prove that you've done certain... I've bought these three fair trade goods and I helped a lady across the road.
Well, I like the idea that when my missus shouts at me for not emptying the dishwasher, I'm going to ask to see her moral licence.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that will probably provoke more shouting and maybe even physical violence. Speaking of wives and marriages, this is a great story. A man has become a hit on the dating app Tinder after he asked his wife's help picking up other women. This is correct. You heard that rightly. Eddie Azar, 22, from Singapore, and his spouse, Asha, last year decided to have an open relationship with the pair, mutually agreeing to see other people. The long and the short of it is he went on Tinder, couldn't get any luck, and then she helped him. She's like, that's the wrong mugshot, that's the wrong description, I'll tell you what to do. So does it take a woman to find a suitor for another man?
I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? I can't work out why she would do... Is she trying to get rid of him, or...
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Maybe she wants other women to do all of that dirty work that she doesn't want to do.
Maybe that's it. She's like, I don't want to touch you. Let's get rid of you to other... I mean, also, I sort of, it doesn't mention how well her Tinder profile was doing. So maybe there was a bit of, oh, I feel sorry for you. I'm having a great time. You'd better get at least a couple of dates.
Well, should we take that as a given, that if a lady of any level of attractiveness decides to be on the market, she's going to find someone? And it's not quite as simple for men, is it?
Well, no, especially not. I mean, if he can't even write a bio properly, that can't be. I don't know what was on his profile. Does it say what was on his original profile?
Well, he's quoted as saying, my wife is one of the best pickup artists I know. One afternoon while I was wallowing deep in the pit of despair, knowing that the dating game is simply an unfair hell for men, my wife grabbed my phone and set up two dates for me in half an hour. She took over his account, and it doesn't give any particular details as to why, but he says, if she can get girls to agree to go out with me when they think she's me, and the only thing she's doing differently is how she's writing, the problem isn't me, it's my game. So I think it was, I think her help was strategic, really.
But I do wonder if she's changed his bio to that, hey, this is Eddie's wife, please get him out of my hair for a yeah. couple of nights because he's so annoying.
That's it.
I will owe you a drink. You know,
she's just recruiting help from the sisterhood.
That's it, yeah.
Is there any credence in the idea of an open relationship? Are you currently courting at the moment?
I am, yeah, I'm engaged.
Right, yes. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And, well, so first of all, how did you get this girl? How did you... win her services?
Me and my girlfriend, Hannah, we've been together now. I should know that, shouldn't we? It's coming up to 5 years.
Right.
But we met through online dating, actually.
Wow.
Through the Guardian Soulmates.
That's nice.
That says a lot, doesn't it? Very snobby. but yeah, just, and I'm sure you know this, through comedy, it's very hard to meet people because you're gigging in evenings and have no social life.
Correct.
So you only
and other comics are not marriage material,
no,
are they?
Oh, goodness, no. They are. That is the worst. So, so we met through that, and she's also similarly in the acting world, so yes.
Was she aware of your work when you went on the first date? Has she already looked you up?
Oddly, she'd seen me at a gig, but years before.
Right.
So that's quite strange.
Because I think that's troubling, isn't it? Because they've got sort of a head start on you because they've already seen you in action,
yeah,
got to know
see,
you a
I
bit.
I think people have that with everyone now because you can Google or Facebook anyone, really,
it's true.
Can't you?
It's true.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I always feel a little bit suspicious when you can't Facebook someone.
Yeah.
Or someone.
Or when their account is locked, I always think that's a bit freaky too.
Why? What have you got to hide? It's just that terrible thing of like the government saying, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. I always think that that's wrong because I've got nothing to hide, but I'm still scared of spiders. But then you still see these people go, why are you hiding it? What's your picture of? Have you killed a lion or something? What is it that, you know?
Yeah. Have you put a cat in a bin?
That's it. Something horrible. Yeah.
And so did you, I mean, let's not pry too much, but let's pry a little bit. Did you play the dating game for a while? And did you write your own profile, or did you get your female best friend to do
it? No, I wrote mine. But you see, this is, I think, again, an advantage of what we do. I wrote a comedy-ish profile.
Right.
And that works. You know, I've got some jokes in there, trying to make it lighthearted. And I think that really helps. But I think, you know, I think there are a lot of people who don't, you know, it's the same way that lots of people like go online to find best man speeches and things. There are people that don't have writing experience.
Yeah.
But it's very curious that him getting his wife to write a profile worked and his... But again, I mean, he just might be useless at writing. He might have just put, hey, I'm a cool stud guy.
Yeah.
I like the ladies.
Sex machine.
Rubbish. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, come do me. And then, you know.
I like blowjobs.
Yeah, that's it.
You like blowjobs? I like blowjobs. So, therefore, you did that and it worked. And you obviously used humour. What about the... I always wonder whether the profile picture is a key thing because it's often inaccurate. The dilemma, isn't it, is you want the profile pic to be alluring enough that somebody looks at it and takes an interest, but not so alluring that when they meet you, it's a disappointment.
Yeah, that's really hard, though, isn't
because
it?
A lot of people do this thing where they have their... profile picture and they've sort of looked up into the air and the camera's pointing down at them.
Yeah, and that means
so there's
you
no
can't
double
see all
chins.
The chins. Yeah.
So I don't know what your strategy was, but it obviously worked. And so here's my next follow-up question, and I guess the answer is going to be no, but the idea of open marriage, we hear about it quite a lot. There are even websites where you can have an affair and find a mistress.
Yeah.
Do we believe in open marriage as a thing?
It just sounds like a stress, doesn't it? I mean, it's, you know, because it's... What, you know, you take ages to get to know the person you're actually in a relationship, and then what, you've got to take ages to get to know someone else?
Yeah.
What an effort.
It's also two sets of birthdays to remember.
Two sets, or more,
Valentine's.
Depending on how many open relationships you're having. You know, it's... It just sounds tedious to me. Yeah, it's a lot of presence. It's a lot of chat as well. Can you really be bothered to get to know that many people?
I don't think so. Let's take a look at and congratulations, by the way.
Thanks.
Wishing you a very happy nuptials together. And let's look at people sharing their unethical life hacks for saving money, and they are shameless. Life hacks usually involve handy tips to use up leftovers, remove stains, or save money. But Quora users have taken things one step further by sharing their most outrageous tips for getting something for nothing on the question and answer site. So, for example, contributors have responded with cheeky ideas such as hanging out in casinos to get free drinks, the downright outrageous idea of gatecrashing funerals to take advantage of the buffet.
That's amazing, that, isn't it?
Peter was one of those who contributed some tips to the list. He said, check out your local listing of obituaries. If there's a lot for one person, there's going to be a big crowd, many of whom don't know each other. Attend the funeral service, get a lift from one of the mourners to the after party, consume free food and drink whilst muttering suitable platitudes, dress semi-formal, and minesweep the venue for takeaway comestibles. This stunt fed me for 4 years of uni, 2 or 3 days a week. Although I'd imagine he was probably just depressed all the time.
Yeah. Because you're meant to be sort of living your life at that age, but he was watching other people die and be dead. That's quite the opposite.
It's incredible. What about the casino? Go to the casino, exchange $1,000 to tokens.
Yeah, but this is US casinos already. You see, that is US casinos. Can you imagine doing that at one of the ones like in central London?
With the sticky carpet ones.
Yeah, no, yeah. No one's giving you free drinks there.
Well, no, that's exactly it. And they've got this scenario where you exchange the tokens and then the waitresses see your tokens. They will present you with free drinks to get you wasted. And when you're done, exchange your tokens straight back. I don't know. I mean, are you guilty of any of these things? Because there are some low-level crimes which are out there. One of which would be a friend of mine.
Serious,
well, I know because I'm about to admit to committing crime,
right, okay,
on national radio. But one would be going to a prêt à manger, which I think is already a crime in itself, if you think about it, and saying that I'm going to take away and then eating in.
Well, I've done that, Mark, I'll admit.
And I feel bad. I mean, it's like a mutual therapy session going here.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you're doing is you're cruelly depriving the exchequer of the vatable amount on that item. Because apparently, if you eat it out on the street, then that's not a luxury. But if you sit on a very hard chair inside a very generic sterile cafe, then you're larging it, apparently.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
So have you done that? But I find it tricky because it involves... I'm not so bothered about the company because actually it doesn't affect them anyway. No, it sort of affects the government, really, and national, the tax. But I feel a bit bad just lying to another human being.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There is that. You're not going to get your moral license, Mark.
The moral license is not,
it's,
no way.
It's out the window.
Because you say, oh, no, I'm going to take away. And then you, the only table that's available is really near the cash desk where you've just paid. And she looks over at you, just a bit disappointed, really.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always make sure that I go somewhere far away.
Do you?
From the eye line, if I can. God, and if I can't, then
this
I just
through.
Walk out.
See, that makes you a much worse criminal because it's really premeditated.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Sort of incompetent and bumbling.
Yeah, I've learned this is a terrible thing to admit to. I've realised recently that my local supermarket, which I shall not name, no one cares about the self-checkout. So I often say, we'll get a loaf of bread, and you have to put in which type of bread it was.
Yes.
And I'll put the cheaper type of bread.
You are so naughty.
And then I'll put it in my bag and leave, and no one ever knows.
Well, I think they're losing millions from that bloody self-checkout.
It
is a nightmare. It's horrific. But also, the other one, I suppose, this is the hardy perennial of life hacks. The disabled toilet.
Oh, man.
Have you ever...
Only an emergency.
So we'll take that as a yes then.
Yes. Oh, no, I'd say yes, but it's been an emergency. Because there are times, for example, a place I was in, a restaurant I was in the other day, I couldn't find the actual men's loos anywhere.
Really?
But downstairs were women's and disabled, and it turned out the men's were up 2 flights of stairs. And I had no idea. But I was in need of a wee much quicker than that.
Oh, well, listen, I'm going to absolve you then. Just 10 Hail Marys will do it.
That's fine. I'll do it. Do I need to do them on air? Because that's going to get very
boring. Well, no, it's not going to be the best radio. The Vatican will love it, of course. But I think, I mean, obviously the disabled toilet is reprehensible, but I always think you do it when you've had, like, I don't know, you just need cheering up. Because there's something, do you know what I mean? You're like, oh, I've had a rubbish week. I've earned this. I'm going to treat myself. Right. That love, just that, so spacious. can really make it your own. Do you know what I mean? There's a hook for your coat.
You're a terrible man.
I love it. I do. I spend an hour in there. It's like a spa for me. You know, I do. I love it. The thing with the disabled toilet is, and I have many, many disabled friends, and, you know, it could be me and all of that sort of thing. Is the whole point is it's not them and us when it comes to disability. But able-bodied people always have that same thought in their mind when they use a disabled toilet, which is, what is my plan if when I come out? Did you have to fake a limp on those occasions?
No.
Did you drag your leg?
I've been very lucky. I've not had an awkward exit.
Couple of things before we go. We're quite low on time. There's been a report about the most stunning beaches in the UK as voted for by TripAdvisor users. And the headline really is, well, here you go. This is sort of user rating. I've just come back from a holiday in Wales, which was brilliant, beautiful country. A couple of nights in a B&B. And I didn't even speak to any locals about where to go. I just went on TripAdvisor for the best pub, the best restaurant, the best B&B. I'm not taking any local knowledge anymore. I don't even ask for directions because I've got Google Maps. Are these platforms, in a way, doing us a great disservice because, you know, we're trusting what everyone has written on TripAdvisor to be the truth, and we're not getting that authenticity of a human opinion anymore?
Well, but it is an authentic human opinion. It's lots of human opinions as opposed to the one guy that goes, oh, this restaurant that I've been going to 30 years, definitely the best one. You know, I think it's in a way, it's more authentic. But I think the bigger issue is that, you know, if you're in an area with no reception, suddenly you've forgotten how to find where anything is.
And that is the biggest problem of all. Now, I'm going to tell you, we've got an even bigger problem here at Big Food Bar Radio. I don't know if you can hear a bell, but the fire alarm has gone off.
Oh, good. Oh, that'll be the flashing light behind you.
That'll be the one. Which shows how unflappable and professional you are that you kept talking. I think we should go to the hour just because that's our commitment to broadcasting. But such is the need for Tian and Dewey in the world that we're going to wrap the show. Luckily, right. I was supposed to stop the show in 5 seconds anyway. Thanks for listening to Mark Dolan, It's News, and especially thanks to Tian and Dewey. Here is a record. We're going to go and run for it now.